Hi, hello. We have a jam-packed episode of The Dunker Spot coming your way. First, some breaking news. Jimmy Butler out for the year with a torn ACL. What does that mean for him? What does that mean for the Golden State Warriors? What does that mean for Jonathan Kuminga and the trade landscape overall? We get into all of that. Then we talk about the all-star starters being named, any surprises we may have had from either conference, and then we flow into a little reserve talk. Who do we think the coaches are going to name for each conference, and who would we have? Talk through some of those differences. We had some fun, and then we flow into a little award talk. We take stock of the MVP race, especially with so many of the top tier names missing time. We get into our top five there, and then we reveal what our all NBA teams would be and some honorable mentions that we're going to be keeping tabs of. And finally, we close with an unrivaled recap. Lots of big wins over the weekend, lots of big performances. We talk about all that and more. We hope you enjoy this episode. Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of the Yahoo Sports Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan. And joining me, as always, is my co-host, the always excellent Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are you doing, sir?
Feeling good, feeling great. Happy to be here. Excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. Excited to talk some hoop. This should be a fun episode, Nikias.
It should indeed be a fun episode. We have plenty of all-star and awards talk coming your way, but we had a bit of breaking news in the wee hours of the night. So we have to start there with the Golden State Warriors. Jimmy Butler sets a screen, slips, leaps up for a pass to set up a post-up, comes down awkwardly, immediately crumples to the floor, suffers a torn ACL. He is done for the season, which... one, sucks for Jimmy Butler, who was playing at an all-star level. If you didn't have him on your team, at the very least, he deserved to be in the discussion for you with how well he's playing on both ends for Golden State. So it stinks for him, especially at this stage of his career. And it especially stinks for the Golden State Warriors, who ends up winning that game against the Miami Heat. So the Andrew Wiggins, Jimmy Butler revenge game, etc. Golden State wins that one. As of recording, 25-19, they are eighth in the Western Conference, but they are a game and a half out of sixth right now. We are... two-ish weeks away from the trade deadline at this point, and there were already discussions around the Jonathan Kuminga situation. Now, with Jimmy Butler being out, the question becomes, how aggressive do you get if you're Golden State to bring in reinforcements? Does this open the door for Jonathan Kuminga return to the rotation? Are you now using Kuminga to bring in a piece to continue competing and hopefully making a legitimate playoff run once you get there? A lot's in limbo right now. Steve Kerr was asked after the game if the Jimmy Butler injury could lead to more Jonathan Kuminga minutes, and his answer was sure, absolutely. I was like, okay, we will see if that door officially opens, though we are a few days removed from the Jonathan Kuminga trade request report. So, Steve, look, where are you at with Golden State right now? Sorry for the broad question, but it just feels like a lot's going on right now.
The broad question is fine. It's just the freight train from Jimmy Butler right to Jonathan Kuminga is tough to digest because it was hard to watch. Like Jimmy makes tries to make a leap and catch. He's down immediately. You see both Pell Larson and Quentin Post reaction. It's like, oh, this is bad. And it was pretty bad. And then they help him out and it's, you know, he's got a smile on his face, but it's not great. And I think that for me, I had earmarked this part of the season with Golden State, kind of bookmarking, hey, I kind of think I want to talk about them soon because they had this season-long homestand in which they won four straight games. They won six of their last seven. Didn't mean to do that, but got to do this. And put themselves in a position to maybe have enough wins at home to push themselves towards that top six, right? And I feel like that was always the earmark for Golden State season. Can they push themselves into the playoff race? Can they push themselves into top six position? Or are they going to be in the play-in? Like, Golden State's a good home team, haven't necessarily found on the road. Are we sure about the defense? We've had a bunch of questions. Jimmy was a key piece of it, and him getting more comfortable was going to allow more people to play well with the second unit, the staggering lineups. We know how teams are playing against Steph, and Steph's having a great year. With Jimmy out, now it's like, okay, what do we truly have? And we're in a tough spot. To the Kuminga portion, I just don't know if that's going to be enough. Like, I feel like we've gotten to a portion of the program between Kuminga and the Warriors where, hey, this isn't it. He wants out. Y'all haven't played him. You did, and then you didn't. And, like, once you got to that point, what are we doing? So, yeah, you could probably play him more now because Jimmy Butler is out. But then, at the end of the day, what's the goal? So, I mean, do you push this can to the offseason and try and hope that Jonathan Kaminga can help you? Or do you put yourself in a position to where, okay, whatever we are going to get for Jonathan Kaminga is going to help our team right now. But I don't know that you want to sustain this based on the fact that he said, I don't want to be here and y'all aren't playing me.
And I think to that end, like, it's y'all aren't playing me. Y'all don't really believe in me. Because if you did, you would have had an extension last year. Or at the very least, once we hit the offseason, we would have came to something instead of just being a summer-long deal. And so, like, it's all kind of weird. To the Jimmy Butler portion, to circle back, like, I certainly understand how all that compressed in one statement can be a lot. Like, I do think it's been interesting watching the Warriors this year just as a concept as they try to figure out, you know, a full season of Steph plus Jimmy. Like, how do they interact when they're in action together? How often is Steph screening for Jimmy, vice versa? What is the staggering looking like? And you kind of zoom out with the Warriors earlier this year. It was, hey, this defense is still pretty darn good. This offense sure does get kind of hazy when Steph's off the floor. And to your point, Jimmy Butler playing better and being more consistently aggressive, I do think there was still room for him to be more on that front. But Jimmy Butler started to find the rhythm. Steve Kerr found the rhythm of who he wanted to have around Jimmy. That started to get better. Since December 19th, I think Jonathan Kaminga's last game was December 18th, it's kind of flipped team-wide for the Warriors to where they have been an elite offense, and the defense has been solid, but not as strong as it was earlier in the year, to your point about questions about the defense. But in that stretch, since Kaminga's been out of rotation, it's second in offense, it's 12th in defense per clean the glass, and they have been one of the best teams in basketball. So it's just like, as much as I've been frustrated, and I recently tweeted, I can't overstate how stupid this Golden State and Kaminga situation is. They made the move and they started winning again. Like, it's not one-to-one, but it's like, well, they aren't as tough. And so now that we have the Jimmy injury, there is a pathway for Kaminga if you do want to kick this can down the road, which kind of takes me back to what Steve Kerr said post-game. Like, yes, he absolutely can play. And even going back a little bit further, where some of the reasoning to the Kaminga minutes dropping and then eventually just him racking up DMPs was, we don't really love having Kaminga plus Butler plus Draymond on the floor together from like a spacing perspective. And that was one of those things where the trio of those, or that trio, they were winning their minutes early. And as we got towards the end of Kaminga starting and getting big minutes, they were starting to lose those minutes pretty handily. So overall in the year, still good, but it was trending the wrong way. Now with Butler out, that does open up, okay, can we get to Kaminga plus Draymond? Then we just have another shooter in there to make that work? Because I do think they could certainly use the Kaminga drives and just the overall athleticism if they are going to keep him. But then it also circles back to what you said, Steve. It's been pretty clear for a while, like, this is not a long-term relationship. Like, it'd be kind of funny to have Kaminga play for the next week and a half, and then he is traded to insert team here on top of that. And because of how this has been handled and because of like some of the Kaminga, just the strengths and weaknesses, period, I don't know what his trade value is. So like, even if you are looking to save your season, I don't know what a season saving package centered around John Kaminga looks like at this point. Like, is that fair to kind of surmise right now?
Well, I mean, if you're looking for a certain archetype, I would understand how you get there. But if you're looking for, hey, we have a set system and we can get maybe two people for this player, or we can get one person, then yeah, they could be fine. Like, I think the one thing with Golden State is they have a system. They know who they are. You can debate on if it's thriving or still good enough to push past a certain marker. But with the way the teams are defending Stephen Curry, I mean, you look at Charlotte, question mark, question mark, question mark. And then you look at Miami, who did all of the good defending against Stephen Curry, and then everyone else made them pay, and then Stephen Curry made, and it was a tough, tough thing to deal with. So. Yeah. It's more about, okay, can we just get pieces that now have us, you know, we could get more depth, but we're going to play the way we play. The interesting part is, one, they play Toronto. We're recording on a Tuesday. They play them tonight, so we'll see if Kaminga plays. If he doesn't, that should tell you everything you need to know. But then they go on the road for four games. Play Dallas, yes. Minnesota twice, at Utah. Can it transfer? In all these games, they're you're going to see them. Prime ABC Peacock. You're going to see what the Warriors are. And so Stephen Curry's been amazing. I don't know the value of now suddenly trying to ask Jonathan Kaminga to save your season to a degree when you just haven't played him. It just doesn't feel natural to now say, hey, man, want to play? No, I feel like that's done.
I think that's fair. Like, to your point, it was very good. We talked about it on this very podcast. Like, hey, the Warriors off to an interesting start. And also, Jonathan Kuminga is doing all the little things. Like, he's rebounding better. He's defending with more effort. You're starting to see more of the playmaking. Like, it was like, okay, he's finally doing it. And that was a very cool. And at the end of that segment, you asked me, like, hey, do you believe in this? I'm just like, I want to, but I would like to see a longer stretch of this before I press that button. And some of the playback slid. You get some losses. Kuminga goes from starting to, okay, you're coming off the bench, but you're still getting minutes, to those minutes dwindling. And like, oh, wow, this is a whole lot of Will Richard, which salute to the rookie season that Will Richard is having. No shade to him. But it's like, huh, this is getting kind of odd. And now here we are. I will say, if you are an optimist about this situation from like a Kuminga can help us in the short term, I think Draymond Green, for however much stock you want to give, has been pretty consistent in his praise of how Jonathan Kuminga has handled all of this. And like not making a public fuss at the very least, and not being as disruptive as a young player in this situation could be in this spot. And so if it is, hey, I'm playing now, I am not going to argue that Kuminga is suddenly going to love it in Golden State. But like, I don't foresee a situation to where he gets minutes and then he just decides, actually, I'm just never passing the ball again. I dare you to bench me. Like, I don't think anything like that is going to happen if he is back in the rotation. So I keep an eye on that. and then... It is just kind of interesting that we've landed in this spot again to where like they do kind of need Kuminga to help solve this in some way or another, whether it is him filling in or him being the trade piece.
We can be honest. Steve Kerr came out and said Jonathan Kuminga is going to play. And Jonathan Kuminga said, no, I'm not.
It's
over. Done. I'm so sorry. It's done. Like it's over. You have seen your friends in a relationship when it's done. It's done. It's over. Kaput. Done. Out of here.
Okay. All right. Well, to that end, to the trade demand that came out on Thursday from Shams Charania of ESPN, the Kings and Mavs were mentioned as teams that had expressed interest. Shams also said like other teams had expressed interest because they just do not believe Kuminga is going to be there near the trade deadline. The Warriors are reportedly prioritizing expiring contracts unless there's clear positive value coming back. And to the Sacramento Kings in particular, like they had been mentioned as a suitor in the summer when we were talking about sign and trade stuff with Jonathan Kuminga. Hey, here's Malik Monk. The Warriors like, well, he's good, but like that contract though, don't really want that. There was a protected first round pick that was on the table. That's no longer on the table. And so I do wonder if we have any sort of serious Kings-Warriors talks over the next couple of weeks, if that heats up at all. I guess aside from those two teams, Steve, is there a team that makes sense to you for Kuminga or for the Warriors to call and say, y'all have a couple of, to your point, we have y'all have two veteran pieces that we think can fit with what we do. Here's Jonathan Kuminga. Would you like that?
With Jimmy Butler being out, the Kings may make more sense to me than anyone else because we need people. And y'all have people, you know, it's a different scenario than earlier on when, okay, who wants Jonathan Kuminga? What team could elevate Jonathan Kuminga? And if you're Golden State, there's a little bit more of a inspiration for, okay, we need bodies in here. We need someone who can contribute. We don't have Jimmy Butler anymore. So I would not be surprised if the Kings, they don't knock on that door. I don't know. The Dallas portion doesn't move me as much because you have Cooper Flagg. I don't necessarily know how much you want to move around with that. But I think Sacramento is probably the spot where it's like, hey, let's try and figure something out that works out for both of us.
Okay. Understood. Like I circle back to like Brooklyn was another team that was mentioned in the piece. They haven't really had serious conversations. No real interest in Michael Porter Jr. Like that part I found interesting. I would have thought it would have been the Warriors are interested, but they are not willing to give up what it would take to get MPJ more than we haven't expressed real interest. Like, again, depends on where you get that info from, but
that part hasn't made sense to me. I don't think Brooklyn goes in for Kuminga, and I don't think Michael Porter Jr. wants to go from the Nuggets to this role with Brooklyn to the Warriors, where you now have to be what you were in Denver again. I don't know if that vibes.
I think that's fair. I do wonder if like that shifts a little bit with Jimmy out. Like there would technically be room for more of the shot creation. Maybe you get more of a mixture of the Denver and Brooklyn context with Jimmy out. But yeah, to your point, like that is still kind of a whirlwind for him. So that is
buddy,
that.
Buddy, he loves that he's empowered in Brooklyn. There's no way he's going to go to play for Golden State.
Give me a year, and then I'll want to do some serious winning again. But right now, I am good. Okay, so Steve, while we're on the news kick, we did get the All-Star starters announced yesterday. Which means we're not far removed from the All-Star reserves being announced, and I think that's when the real fireworks are going to pop off. But to the starters that were announced, again, 50% of the votes for the fans, 25% for the players, 25% for the media is your split to determine who the starters were. So in the Eastern Conference, your All-Star starters, you have Jalen Brunson of the New York Knicks. You have Tyrese Maxey of the Philadelphia 76ers. You have Cade Cunningham of the Detroit Pistons. Jaylen Brown, who passes Donovan Mitchell for that fifth spot of the Boston Celtics. And you have Giannis Antetokounmpo of the Milwaukee Bucks, which, hey, man, what a season this has been for the Milwaukee Bucks. We will save that for a later date, but oh, man. So those are your five. Donovan Mitchell ends up being sixth. In this order. Were you surprised that this ended up being the five in the East?
I love when you ask me this question. We did the pod a month ago where I said what the starters are going to be, and I got 4 out of 5. The only surprise was Tyrese and Donovan basically flip-flopped in what I thought was going to happen. Because Donovan Mitchell was just consistently on everyone's ballot sixth, and that's where I had Tyrese Maxey when we talked about it. But the players were like sixth. And the fans were like six, and the media was like six. So those two flip-flop. But I thought it was going to be very hard to deny the guard play that we saw from Cade Cunningham, Jalen Brunson early with the Knicks run, and whether it was Tyrese or Donovan, it was going to be interesting. Jalen Brown, I think, just played his way in. I think the surprising part was Jalen Brown getting number one from the media. Didn't expect that to happen. That was a little intriguing. But there was no way you could deny him at a certain point. So it became less more like Jalen Brown or Donovan and more, oh, Jalen Brown is in. You felt like Cade was in. And so it was like, okay, Tyrese Maxey's playing at this high level and the Sixers are winning. It's going to be Jalen Brunson. So I think for Donovan, unfortunately, he's been insane and amazing, but the Cavs kind of slipping and not necessarily having that consistent stretch of winning basketball, I think ended up getting him in the end. And so especially because it's positionless, right? So you kind of knew, Giannis was going to be there. I know you had your games play thing, but that guy was going to be there. And then it was going to be the heavy guard play. Jalen Brown kind of just bulldozed his way in. And so it's like, okay, who's going to miss out? It's Donovan Mitchell. But he'll be there anyways. I think he's a reserve 100%.
Yeah, he's going to be in. To your point, Donovan Mitchell was sixth for the fans, the media, and the players. Karl-Anthony Towns was seventh for the fans and the media. Seventh for the players was Jalen Johnson of the Atlanta Hawks. So a lot of respect for the leap that he's made, taking on more ownership in Atlanta. It's been an interesting run of games since the Trae Young trade. We will put a pin in the Hawks as well about what this has looked like. But that is where we're at. Before we move to the West, were there any other surprises about like fan, player, media ranks with anyone else in that top 10 or even beyond that? Because the full results are just out at this point.
That's the question that I have for you, because I feel like you have a passionate response to what some of these things end up being sometimes. And so I understand. I think Cade getting number one from the players was interesting. And so them respecting that leap was pretty neat. But Giannis is just a force. It's interesting that Giannis was fifth with the media. And it's like, hey, that's still a lot of points. And it's pretty efficient. Mm-hmm. Like, you got to respect that. Brandon Ingram, eighth from the players. What do you think?
It was funny, buddy. It doesn't surprise me because of one, Brandon Ingram is just good at basketball, but like the bucket getting in general, I can imagine for defenders, I'm being physical with him off the ball. I'm navigating all these screens. Now he catches and holds. I'm in front of him. And then he just shoots over my face because of the high release point. Like, this dude is just super annoying. And like, as good as Scottie is, and I still stand on, he is Toronto's best player, in my opinion. He's the most impactful player. I think he should be their all-star rep if Toronto only gets one. I wouldn't be surprised if they get two. We'll get there, though. I definitely understand how the players land on. Brandon Ingram is just tougher to deal with than Scottie Barnes. And so, like, I wasn't surprised there. It was kind of funny looking at where the players had Scottie and Brandon Ingram versus where the media had him. It's just like, ah. Well, I see where we have some alignment in this kind of bit. But I can't say I'm surprised by what the results were.
Well, it's always funny because, like, you see a number on the media, but it's just one person. So, like, Scottie got one Norman Powell got one vote. And it's tough because you got to pick five. You know what I mean? So it gets interesting. Yeah. But the fact that Jaylen Brown was on like everyone's ballot but two is kind of wild to me. But it was a fun split. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was an interesting split. And like, just so I don't have to do it twice, my bit with the players is always like, hey, man, you are not a fan of the media in some aspects. And I do think media criticism in some aspects is just fair with how they handle stuff and some of the biases that creep in. So I don't want to take that completely away. But it is just very funny, like, hey, trust the players. We know what we're talking about. Here's a vote for Bronny James. Here's a vote for Jason Tatum, who has not played a minute this season. It's getting close, apparently. But it's just like, I would like for the players to like take this more seriously when they do this kind of thing. So like, that's just like my general PSA with that kind of thing. But I'm not going to hang there too long.
Go ahead and inform the people. Let them know.
get
your takeoff, man.
It's not going to be a full-blown rant. Like, I do it every year. But it's just like, if you're going to vote, like, at least pretend to take it seriously. Like, why are we voting for people that aren't in rotations, much less starting, much less playing at an all-star level? Like, that always just kind of bugs me. This, we are talking about all-star voting compared to literally everything else that's happening in the world. So, like, obviously not a big deal in comparison. But, like, if we're going to do this, like, I'd much rather you just not vote than vote for someone that has played 17 minutes on the year. Like, why are we doing that? That's all.
Stunning way to find out you don't believe in the power of friendship.
So send a text, go out to dinner. You ain't got to do that with the votes. All right, let's move to the Western Conference, Steve. Your starters. We have Stephen Curry of the Golden State Warriors. We have Shai Gilgeous-Alexander of the Oklahoma City Thunder. We have Luka Doncic of the Los Angeles Lakers, Victor Wembanyama of the San Antonio Spurs, and Nikola Jokic of the Denver Nuggets. I would assume there are no surprises, but I would open the floor to you. Is there anything that kind of piqued your interest with the starting group in the West?
Assume no surprises. Give me my victory lap. I told you this a month ago. I told you this a month ago was gonna be these five people. You can go find it on the Dunker Spot playlist on the Yahoo Sports NBA YouTube channel. You should subscribe. I said this. Yeah. Me.
You sure did.
Steve Jones. Let everyone know this is gonna be the five. Yeah. So let's get that out of the way. Number two, now that I'm done joking around, I think it got tough because Anthony Edwards has been on such a run. And like as we got more returns, you were starting to see, hey, who is not going to make it? Because I think you could say all six had a case. And the fact that Wimby and Anthony Edwards literally tied speaks to it. But I think it was going to be very hard to kind of keep certain people off. Like, Jokic was a lock. Shai was a lock. Luka was a lock. And Steph Curry, especially once he got the fan vote, was going to be a lock. Now, it's interesting. The media put him sixth. A lot of people left him off their ballots. Good, which I found intriguing considering the year he's had, but he's been playing entirely too well to be up there. So was it going to be Ant or was it going to be Wimby? And I think with Wimby playing at a high level on both ends, the Spurs winning games, that's where it gets really tricky and interesting because, you know, they were neck and neck on the fan vote, you know, and then for the players, Ant was fourth, right? For the media, Wimby was fourth. So it was going to be just who's going to push and pull and win that out. But no, I have no surprises with the Western Conference starting five. And I think it gets tough once you kind of get down the line on who else would have kind of tapped into some of them ballots.
Like, it's funny, like we talked about the East and Donovan Mitchell was six for everyone and Kat was seven for two of the groups. And Jalen Johnson was the other. You get to the West, and there was just a different grouping everywhere. For the fans, Wimby was next up at six. Anthony Edwards was seven. For the media, Steph was six. KD was seven. For the players, Luka was six. Wimby was seven. Two of your all-star starters just out for the players. So I was like, oh, this is fascinating how they came to these. And, like, there's just this diversity of thought between the three groups. So, like, I found that part interesting. As far as surprises, like, I can't get all the way there. Like, I think I do lean towards, like, I probably have Ant over Steph. But, like, I think that is very much a what do you prefer type beat. Like, I don't think it's Steph in a landslide on one side or Ant on in a landslide on the other side. So, like, I think that's just genuinely fine. I do wonder, as I look at some of the media and player splits in particular, sorry to annoy you in advance, Steve. Like, I do wonder how much the games played factor in for either of them.
Oh,
in terms of brother. How it's end up landing 1 through 7. Because, like, I think it, I just found that. I just wonder how much of a factor it was. It could be 0. It could be like 10%. Like, I don't know. But, like, there are so many, like, games played splits between everyone in this group. That's where I was just like, huh, I wonder how people thought about that, if at all.
What if they didn't?
Then that's
fine. What if it wasn't like a that, thought? What if it didn't occur? We must resist the games played.
Society has progressed past the need for the game. No. Look at this. Why is the thought? Like you said, it could have been 0. And if so, wouldn't have been a surprise to me. Like, I acknowledge I am very much in the minority of considering, like, the games played thing for All-Star stuff. But the minority does not mean I am literally the only person. So that's where I was curious. As for other results, heading into this, I was curious to see, like, what the media and the player split for Luka was going to be, because he has been incredible this season. But, like, there's also, like, the defense and just general thoughts about the Lakers in general. Like, the Lakers just being in the top 6 hunt and having this record because they are insane in clutch time and, like, they are technically being outscored on the season. It's just like, this is just weird. What do we do with this year? But the fans love it. So, like, it ultimately didn't
hope. Hope they figure out the defense. That's what we do.
Yeah. So that part was interesting. Like, Denny landing 5th among the fans was an interesting one for me. But again, you look at the player splits, the media splits, for even with the top 5s, where, like, there was just differences everywhere. The players having KD top 5 was a fun one for me. Like, there is still a level of respect and reverence for the bucket getting and the playmaking, but especially the bucket getting that Kevin Durant has done this year in Houston. So that part was interesting. The media landed the 8th with... Good. I was just going to say, like, Kawhi was an interesting one as well. Like, just a very wide discrepancy between the media and the fan/player vote there. That was it. Was there anything else down the ballot that kind of caught your eye?
It feels weird that LeBron's not a starter. It feels odd. It's a sinking feeling. My back hurts when I see it. It's just not something you've really considered for over 20 years. Think about that. Like, let that sink in. I saw LeBron 8, 8, 9, and I'm like, that doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
Salute to LeBron James. It's tough.
Not just 21 All-Star appearances. 21 straight years of him being an All-Star starter is absurd, to your point. But that has ended. And I guess that transition to, like, the reserve bit to this, as those are going to be announced, the coaches handles those. While we're on LeBron, do you think the coaches get LeBron in? Or do you think that is going to be more of a Adam Silver decision if he decides to do that?
I don't think he's going to be there, Nick Ives. I don't think it would be a replacement, but I don't think it's going to happen. That's why to me, I said it's odd. It's weird. Not that he's not worthy. It's just there's a lot of players having great seasons. And so I don't know if the coaches are going to swing for the fences and have a swan song. I don't know if he wants to even do that.
You know,
just get a handout. I know LeBron doesn't want to get a handout. I know he knows how good he is, but it's just like, I'm not sure. I mean, I think, to thinking about it, like, Anthony Edwards, Kevin Durant, Devin Booker, Shingun, probably going to be there. Jamal Murray, you probably lock that in. It's 5 people, right?
Mm-hmm.
So now it's like, okay, who does LeBron replace? Austin Reeves, because we haven't seen Austin Reeves in a while. Are we going Julius Randle? Are we going Chet Holmgren? Like, I'm having a hard time thinking the Thunder only send one person to the All-Star game. And that's not like a diss against Chet, but, like, just numbers-wise, Chet probably gets there. So that's 6. It just gets tricky. Does James Harden get there? Like, I think the reserves are going to be pretty interesting in that case.
Yeah, like, that's going to be such a tough one out west. Like, I guess to answer my own question, like, I don't think the coaches get LeBron in. I would not be surprised if we get the ceremonial, like, naming of LeBron as an All-Star reserve. And from there, like, if LeBron decided, like, I am here, I will do something at midcourt. I'm not playing, though. then like that's fine. Like I think LeBron has earned that to where he gets the selection and he's like, actually, I'm chilling. I am taking this time off because we still have to figure things out for the second half of the season, that type beat. So that part wouldn't surprise me. I do think he's going to be involved in the weekend in some capacity.
Well, can I raise my hand? You sure? He kind of did that last year.
He did. and that's where I was just like, I understand the oddity of him not being named. I'm just like, I don't know if we need to be super aggressive about like pushing for it either. Cause like, I don't even know if he wants to be there for real. You know what I mean? But like, I think if left up to Adam Silver and like any good publicity you can add, I think you take that as commissioner. Like, I would be surprised if he doesn't do something, is kind of my general point there. So like that gets interesting. As far as predicting what I think is going to happen while we're on the Western Conference overall, like Ant's going to be in. Jamal Murray's going to be in. I think Kevin Durant is going to be in. And then from there, I was like, I got like 10 names for these other four spots, and I'm not sure what the coaches are going to do.
What are the 10 but names? You only have four. You only have three locks?
For me, yeah. Where I was like, I know for a fact that these guys are just going to be in. Like, I think, one, they're very good and they have all-star caliber seasons, but also I would imagine coaches having a general reverence for what they do, how hard they are to game plan against, that kind of thing. And so that's where I'm just like, ooh, after that, I could see a lot of different cases just on my own. There are a lot of cases where like I think maybe coaches may view this person higher than I would, and this is how they get in. And so I said Ant already, said Jamal Murray already, said Kevin Durant already. I do think Julius Randle is going to end up getting in, which he has just had a very good season this year. Was it 22-7-5 for him? The efficiency has been very good. The Wolves offense has pretty much died when he's been off the floor so far this year. Like part of that has been the time where Anthony Edwards missed time. And so that obviously factors in. But like his drives and his playmaking have been very important. I think Randle's going to be in. So that's four. I think Devin Booker is going to get in. It's a quote-unquote down year in terms of his traditional box score stuff, but I do think, one, he is still incredibly difficult to game plan against because of what he does on and off the ball. The Suns team has been very good, and so I do think Booker's going to get there. That gets to five.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, okay, Kawhi's been insane. He's at a game's disadvantage against some of these players, but, like, Kawhi's been insane, and the game's also in L.A., but it's also, like, there's other stuff surrounding the Clippers.
Nah, man, Knee irritation. We will not see Kawhi Leonard.
So we'll see what happens with Kawhi. Like, Didi Avdia has been very good, and the Blazers are in the play-in picture. And you look at it, 26-7-7 for him. Also, he's been off the floor this year, so he's been very good. I don't know how much, like, I don't know where the coaches land on him. Like, I would just flat out have him in, but, like, I don't know. The foul drawing in particular and the drives have been very impactful. Also annoying. So I don't know what that's going to look like, right? Mention KD, but like Alperen Sengun's going to be in the conversation, I would imagine. And so James Harden, if you are going to have a Clipper rep, if it's not going to be Kawhi, it is hard not to have James Harden in this conversation at minimum with what he's done as a playmaker. And so like,
I was waiting just for you to say James's name.
Yeah, like James Harden has been very good this season. As you mentioned, Chet Holmgren, who has been very good this season, and the defense in particular has been incredible. I think he's going to factor in heavily in the DPOY conversation. And then there is always the general thought of this is the best team in insert conference here. This team deserves multiple all-stars, which I hate that argument, but that is just a consistent thing through all-star history. It'd be hard not to see Chad.
Why do you dislike that argument? You win games, you play well, you earn an all-star spot.
I think you should just make the case for... Yeah, I think you should just reward the player for playing well. Like, I'm not saying that you can't make an argument for Chet Holmgren as someone that has made an argument for Chet Holmgren. My thing is, make the case that Chet is an all-star because of what he is actually doing, not the Thunder just deserve two, and so we need to pick the second guy. Like, it's a very slight difference in language, but, like, where I'm like...
I get that, but when you kind of break this down and you end up, I have two Rockets, I have two Wolves, I have two Nuggets, why do I not have two Thunder who are the best team in the Western Conference? I think that's fair. I think it's a fair thing to consider. Like, why am I putting two people from all these other teams that are not as good as this team as all-stars? So I'm going to call my shot real quick before we go to break. Okay. I'm going to call my shot right now. Okay. Anthony Edwards, Kevin Durant, Devin Booker, Alperen Şengün, Chet Holmgren, Jamal Murray, James Harden. Is that eight people?
Yeah.
That's seven, isn't it?
I think that's seven.
Julius Randle.
Oh, well, that's eight.
I don't know if it's seven or eight. I don't even know the numbers. I can't even count. Julius Randle. Oh, Julius Randle's right there. Sarah, back me up. I'm going to call my shot. Anthony Edwards, Kevin Durant, Devin Booker, mm-hmm. Alperen Şengün, Chet Holmgren, Jamal Murray, James Harden. Those are your reserves.
That's your seven. Okay. And for me, Anthony Edwards, Jamal Murray, Julius Randle, Devin Booker, Kevin Durant, Kawhi Leonard, Chet Holmgren. I think those are going to be your seven, which, again, would leave Denny out, who has been incredibly good. Would leave Alperen Şengün out, who has also been incredibly good. So we'll see where the coaches land on the West. And before we go to break, Steve, with the Eastern Conference, who do you have getting in? Who do you think the coaches go with?
You tell me first, buddy.
Okay, fair enough. This may surprise you, Steve, but I think who gets in for the East is going to be a lot different than what I would actually do. But as far as predictions go, Donovan Mitchell is going to be in. I think Jalen Duren is going to be in. I think Jalen Johnson is going to be in. I think the coaches are going to side with you, Steve, and go with Brandon Ingram over Scottie Barnes. I would super disagree with that, but I do think that's what the coaches are going to do. So that is four. I think Norm Powell is going to be the Heat rep. I think you can still make the case for Bam Adebayo, especially if you're factoring in what he means to that defense. But I think the coaches go Norm. Career year, the shooting, the drive has been important. I think Derek White gets in this year.
What?
I think if Boston gets in, I think coaches are going to prioritize. I think they're going to be high on the playmaking, the screening, the defense, the overall impact that he has, despite what the shooting numbers are. Now, quick spoiler, I would not have Derek White in, but I do think with a Boston team that has been this good and has outperformed expectations to this degree, and for a guy like Derek White, who is good, impactful, and has been around the fringes of all-star conversations before, I kind of think this is going to be the year that Derek White actually gets the coach's nod. If I end up being wrong, that's fine, but I think the coaches are going to lean. I think they're going to go Derek White this year. And hey, I have Michael Porter Jr. as the last prediction for me in these. What's up?
Understood. Now, I want you to go, you know, as we go to this break, there's a candle back there, light it, and hopefully it delivers you some shame. Because doing that in the year of 2026 with no belief behind it is very funny. I'm going to call my shot. Donovan Mitchell, Karl Anthony Towns, Jalen Duren, Jalen Johnson, Brandon Ingram, Norman Powell, Pascal Siakam.
Ooh, you think the coaches go Pascal? He's been very good, so I wouldn't be mad at that. I like the Pascal shot. Very quickly, because I bet you I did have some differences. Mitchell's in, Jalen Johnson's in, Scotty Barnes will be my guy over Brandon Ingram. Jalen Duren, Michael Porter Jr., Norm Powell, Evan Mobley would be the seven for me. Don't think it's going to land that way, but that is where I would have it as of January 20th. We are going to – oh, go ahead.
Did you just deliver two lists?
Yeah, I did the same thing for the West.
All right. Get us out of here.
All right. While Steve recovers, we're going to take a quick break. And when we return, we are going to talk about the MVP and all NBA conversations as we have technically passed the midway point of the season. We're going to have some fun. Stay tuned. And we are back with this episode of The Dunker Spot, and it is time to do a little bit of award talk. Not doing all of them today. We'll be sprinkling those in over the next few episodes, but we're going to check in with the MVP award, and then we're going to flow into an all-NBA conversation since there are a lot of great seasons happening. There are also some games play shenanigans to keep in mind, even at this point of the season. So it's going to be interesting to talk through this. And like one thing that I do genuinely appreciate, Steve, when we have these conversations, it's like, naturally, we're both aware of the games played thing, but I appreciate that we have different approaches. So I think where you are more so, hey, when we get to the end of the year, if these guys don't qualify, then like we'll make our adjustments. Like I have a long list that I'm whittling down anyway. I'll get to that when it's time to get to that. And for me, I'm just like, hey, here are some guys that are not on pace to meet this threshold. So I am moving you over here. And if you make it by the end of the year, then I'll move you back in. Like, I don't think either approach is wrong, to be clear. But it's just kind of funny that we are on opposite ends of that spectrum. So as we head into the MVP and all NBA discussion, I will once again give my spiel, especially for the new dunkers. 65 games played minimum is in place. That is roughly 79% of games played. And so for, if you want a quick list of players that are currently under that threshold of games played, so players that have not played at least 79% of their team's games, players currently on pace to be ineligible include Nikola Jokic, who's played about 74% of his team's games. He's still out for Denver. Giannis, who's played two-thirds of his team's games, 66.7%. Wemby's played about 67% of his games. Steph Curry is right under it. He's played about 77% of his. Kawhi Leonard's at 71% of his. Lauri Markkanen's around 77% of his. Austin Reeves at 56% of his. Paolo and Franz Wagner of the Orlando Magic, both underneath that threshold. So if you're thinking MVP, All-NBA, if you don't see or hear those names, that is literally why, at least on my end. They are currently under, so I'm like, I'm holding them out. And there are some guys that are on the borderline, but we'll get there a little bit later. So just wanted to get that disclaimer out the way before we had our fun. Now, Steve, top five for MVP, and I know you have a longer list from there. Is it safe to say that you have Shea one? Or, like, how much competition do you have at the top right now?
I mean, the reason why I wanted to check in on this right now is I think it's a fun time. All-stars get named, and I think there's a difference between kind of thinking in the MVP and building out the conversation. Like, I always think you should check in on these awards as the season goes on to kind of see what different paths are on and also kind of feel out, ooh, does this feel different than when I felt like 2 months ago? Not that the player has fallen off that people like to say, but it's like, okay, what's their path to get back to this, or has someone else emerged in this? And I think it gets really interesting in this stage. Like, for me, my MVP, that's my first team. So that's like my five is my five, and then who are the next 10? And so I kind of build them out in what's the word I'm looking for? I build them out together. That's what I'm going to say. I think Shea is the MVP right now. Thunder too good. So I think it's Shea Gilgeous-Alexander. He's been incredible. He's been a machine. I know they've had what people call a bump in the road, but he has consistently contributed to success for this team offensively and held them down. Jokic, we haven't seen a little bit. He's still up there for me. So, I mean, that's something where it's like I probably will have to reevaluate this down the line as he comes back. And now what happens with 3 through 5 gets real interesting at this point in the season, and that's why I want to talk it out, because I think it's important. Like, I think people kind of assume, oh, well, why'd you switch up? No, I've been thinking about this for a little bit. I had my five settled, Nikias. It was some combination of Shea, Jokic, Giannis, Wemby, Luka. I'm good. Leave me alone.
And then
am I still there is the question that I ask myself. Luka's been incredible. Lakers are sixth. Giannis has been incredible. There, the Bucks are in the play. Wimby's been really good, but he's been in and out. So what do I do with Cade Cunningham? What do I do with Jaylen Brown? When do they re-enter the conversation? How far do they get? Because I was comfortable with, like, hey, they're in the discussion. Are they now fifth? Are they now fourth? Are they knocking on doors I didn't think of? I still personally probably still have Luka and Giannis still in there. And I, you know what? If I probably would still put Wemby in there. But I'm considering the fact that Jaylen Brown has had this impact on Boston. I know people are going to say, well, usage. Usage isn't easy, folks. Like, it's being a high usage player is a hard thing to do. So, you know, absorb the spreadsheet, but understand that that's a responsibility that not many people can take. Cade has been rock solid for that Detroit team that it just is nails every single night. We are who we are. Good job beating us for a little bit. We're going to come back and win. Like, they're just nuts. So for me, that's where I'm like, what do I do with 3, 4, 5?
Like, I was in a one. Like, I do also have Shea as my MVP right now. 31.8 points. 60% on twos is still just nuts for Shea. When you think about the types of shots that he's taking and the help that he sees inside the arc, like, you just are not supposed to be able to do that. You're not supposed to do that as a guard, period. But especially once you factor in those other things. 39% from three. He's still taking the step backs in the rhythm. Knocking down catch and shoot opportunities when he gets them. 89 from the line. 4 boards, 6 assists. We've talked about the playmaking. We literally had a Shea breakdown discussing the decision making that he's having. We are fresh off of talking about the Thunder and some of the traps he saw against Houston and how he adjusted to that. So that's there. 1.3 steals, 0.8 blocks. And I will say, and I tweeted this the other night, like, hey, some of this weak style stuff from Shea, it's not a new development if you've been watching him since he's donned a Thunder jersey. But like the last couple of weeks in particular, like you saw it in the Spurs game very loudly. You saw it in the Cleveland game as well. Like he is just rotating on time, on target. And like, it's been kind of fun to watch that part pop as well. So like Shea is just, he's a firm one. And now depending on when Jokic comes back and then how healthy he is when he does come back, if he's back on pace, I think it is still going to be a fun discussion between him and Shea. So I don't want to completely set that to the side. But as I mentioned up top, like he is at 74% of his game. So he's not on pace to be eligible for award stuff right now. So that's why I have him to the side. And so for me, I knew Steve, Shea was going to be one. And I felt like Cade and Jaylen Brown in some order were going to be two and three. And then figuring out four and five was where my headache was going to come in. And so I landed on Cade second. The Pistons 27-9 in his games. Cade averaging 26-6-10. His turnovers are down from last year, despite the playmaking perking up and more usage in that regard. 1.4 steals, 0.8 blocks, 51% on twos, 33% from three in one of the weirdest, like, high volume shooting seasons I think I've encountered since covering the NBA seriously, to where he is just knocking down all of the off the dribble threes, and you give him a spot up opportunity, he just cannot knock them down for whatever reason. Surely there's going to be some kind of flip at some point, but he's just been nails, man. Like, we've talked about the drives, and just we've always talked about his cadence, the tempo that he plays with. The playmaking has perked up. His decision-making when getting two on the ball has gotten better. Naturally, Jalen Duren making the leap that he's had or the leap that he's made has helped those possessions be more fruitful for Cade Cunningham. But Cade is diagnosing the floor better. Like, I've appreciated the defensive effort from Cade this year while still having that kind of usage offensively. The Pistons, I think, plus 10 per 100 possessions with Cade on the floor per PvP stat. So, like, they are not just beating teams, but they are beating teams down when he is available. And so that's where I ultimately landed with him over Jaylen Brown. I think the playmaking burden is a little bit there. Because the one thing you can kind of poke at with Cade compared to other MVP candidates is like the efficiency overall isn't there. I think he's slightly below league average right now. But
hey, roster context, efficiency is a myth. Efficiency is a myth. I'm in a phone booth and I'm making things happen for my team every night. How efficient do you want me to be? I produce. Continue.
More than that, I think, would be the answer within this context. But no, like, to your point, like, Detroit needs more shooting. And there is, again, a level of attention that Cade draws in general. So it's not, to your point, an easy thing to do. But if we are comparing Cade to other number one options, that is a number where, okay, he doesn't compare as favorably to the other guys. So I was trying to parse through the efficiency from Cade plus versus the playmaking compared to other guys. And that's where I still landed with Cade at two right now for me. I did put more value on the playmaking. And again, the defense has been better this year than last year, in my opinion. So he's two. Jaylen Brown is three for the reasons that you mentioned. Taking on more usage is not easy. Him doing so and doing so efficiently while also having the playmaking bump, while also being willing to take on tough defensive assignments at times. I will say, on balance, I think it's been a solid defensive year. Like, I don't know if I can get to like all defense with him. But like, he has been solid, and that's not an easy thing to do with the offensive workload that he has. 24-15 in the Jaylen Brown game so far this year. Boston again near the top of the East, so he deserves credit there. And then the headache began, Steve. And then the headache began. Because I ultimately landed on six players for the last two spots that I was trying to cycle through and thus flow into all NBA stuff. Because there are a lot of good seasons happening, Steve. So you've talked about Stephen Curry and how good he's been and how impactful he is and how he still strikes fear in the hearts of opposing defenses, which, quick aside, I did not watch the Warriors-Hornets game live, but I saw tweets of Draymond post-game talking about what they did against Steph. And then I saw a tweet from Steph post-game about what they did. And, like, this is Hornets-Warriors. Like, I want to tap in with that anyway. Once I saw that, I was like, okay, I'm absolutely checking this out after church tomorrow. Let's see what happened here. Some of the funniest defense I think I've seen. Like, Colin Sexton about to follow that man to the tunnel, have me laughing. I think what goes under-discussed in this, because it was very aggressive, we are not letting Steph do anything, and so Steph naturally countered with setting screens and all the things that open things up for the rest of the offense. I need people to watch the first possession of that game, because the Hornets were not doing that, and they immediately lost track of Stephen Curry. Like, bot switch. It was just a very weird possession. Immediately lost him. And I, like, tweeted as a joke. I was like, yeah, Charles Lee saw that possession, said, nope, we ain't doing that. New plan. Steph doesn't touch the ball. Like, I don't know that. Obviously, I didn't ask Charles Lee. That probably wouldn't have been the game plan for him off ball anyway. But it was very funny to see, you know, normal defense immediate coverage bust. And then the next thing you know, Cion James is just in Steph's jersey for the rest of the game. So that was just a funny one for me. But
I was gonna add to it before you continue on. If you wanna, like, we talked Warriors earlier, but the funniest subplot is teams saying, hey, don't ever leave Steph Curry's body. And you watch Steph Curry just saunter down the court, understanding there's gonna be a human being on his back. He's just like, all right, let me stop and let me position myself, and I might screen, I might push you away. But it's just like, it's a funny thing to just visually see all the time. Like, I know he has to be exhausted, not just like tired, but just like, bro, why are you right here?
Like, get off me.
Like, like, the camera just zooms in on him. He's just like, all right, man. Jesus.
Like, bro, I am in my 30s. Why are we doing this? Play defense for real. So that's a very funny bit for me. But anyway, naturally, Steph in this conversation for me, the Warriors are 21-13 in his games, 27-4-5 for him. He's also converting nearly 60% of his twos this year, Steve. Under 40% from three for what feels like the first time forever, but the volume is insane, and you know what kind of fear that he strikes in the heart of defenses. So, thought about Steph Curry. Thought about Donovan Mitchell. 22-18 in his game, so that hurts in the MVP conversation, but you look at what the Cavs are doing with him on the floor, higher on-court net rating than Steph and the Warriors when he's on the floor, higher on-court net rating than Anthony Edwards when he's on the floor for the Wolves, who's also in discussion for me, higher on-court net rating than Jaylen Brown when he's on the floor for the Celtics, higher on-court net rating than Tyrese Maxey, another guy that I thought about. And it's just like, hey, man, like, this season isn't Donovan Mitchell's fault. It's not like he's completely faultless, because, like, as we've talked about over here and as I've tweeted out, like, some of the off-ball stuff from Donovan Mitchell defensively this year has been very funny. I would just put it that way. Is a oscillating between I am super aggressive and going for a pass in the passing lanes that I probably shouldn't, and I'm just chilling in the corner, and then I turn around, it's like, oh, that was my tag, wasn't it? And then you see the tap or the point as they're inbounding the ball. There's been a lot of those for Donovan Mitchell. But he's been so good and so important, and the Cavs just do not function the same way when he's not on the floor, when you're factoring in Evan Mobley's missed some time, Jared Allen's missed some time, and then he wasn't closing games. Darius Garland's been in and out of the lineup. I'm just like, he's been so good. Just got to think about him.
So Maxey, who'd you pick?
Luka.
There's more?
Okay. yeah, I was going to get there because, like, Jalen Brunson, when we had the MVP conversation, what, a month or so ago, like, Jalen Brunson was in my top five because of what he was doing. The scoring, the playmaking growth, the Knicks were doing all the things. They were, I think, the second best offense in the league. Oh, boy, the last month of New York Knicks basketball, Steve, coming off of a game in which they were blown out by the Dallas Mavericks in Madison Square Garden.
Jalen Brunson's going through it. He said, hey, we're not very good. And then it's like, yeah, I understand if y'all booing us. Did you see when he grabbed everyone and was like, hey, everyone come here, man.
What y'all doing?
When you are simultaneously pointing to multiple portions of the crowd and tapping your chest, it's not a good sign for how things are going. Yeah. So, yeah, it's not great.
Yeah. And so it's like, and like, Jalen Brunson just got back, and I think the Knicks were 1-4 in the games that he hasn't played yet. So there's a hint of value on top of that. And it's like, okay, so the Knicks haven't been good for the last month or so. The defense has fallen off a cliff. Jalen Brunson has been part of that. But also, you zoom out for the overall year, it's still 28-6. They are 24-14 in his games. I think they're like +5 or +6 with him on the floor. Like, good things are still happening overall with the Brunson season. And then the one that really had me thrown for a loop, Steve, was Luka, who is like, he's like recently eligible for me in terms of like being on pace to hit this game's limit, et cetera. It is 33-8-9 for Luka Doncic, 57% on twos, 34% on threes, 78 from the line. He's getting to the line quite a bit. The defense has just been bad. I do not think it is his fault that the Lakers have a bad defense, but Luka is a figurative and literal big part of why the Lakers defense is bad. Effort, off-ball miscues, transition defense, like, he has to own some of that, right? So there's that piece of it. But it's also like, the reason why the Lakers are good, they are 21-12 in the Luka games, which is well above like a 60% win rate, etc., is because Luka has still been insane offensively. Because of the interior scoring, the rim finishing, though he hasn't got to the rim a ton, a lot of that is roster context, but some of that is him. The playmaking is still there. And the Lakers are a top 10 offense, largely off the strength of what Luka Doncic is doing. And it is not easy to have that kind of offensive burden. especially within correct. This context where they don't have a bunch of rollers like he had in Dallas. They don't have a ton of shooting to stock him with. Austin Reeves has been out. LeBron missed the start of the season and he came back. Like, that's been the thing. And so it's like, huh, this is kind of odd. And so, like, let's look under the hood with the Luka season, right? It's like, huh, they're like a plus one with them on. It's like, okay, well, that's not really doing the trick compared to some of these other MVP candidates. Okay, let's look at the Luka clutch stuff. Since the reason why the Lakers have this record despite a negative point differential is because they have been insanely good in clutch time. Steve, do you know what Luka Doncic has shot in clutch time this year?
No, tell me.
He is 4 of 12 from the floor in clutch time. So this is like, I can't even use the like Anthony Edwards, he's a killer in clutch time and he's winning them these kind of games, etc. I went through the clips to see when his shots were being taken and stuff like that. And it's like, his clutch assists and his clutch shots have all come with like, you know, 2:30 left, 2 minutes left, 1:50 left. It's not even like the game winning or game time variety with those. So I was like, I can't even do that. And so I was like, ha, this is all weird. So say all of that to say.
So who did you choose? Who did you pick?
I say all that to say. I landed on Anthony Edwards at 4 and Donovan Mitchell at 5. Okay. And at 35-4, good defense. We just had a breakdown about Ant as well. Check down on the channel. Most efficient offensive season of his career to this point. He has been a clutch monster, still converting nearly 72% of his shots in clutch time. So he has that working for him. He is coming off of the Spurs game. Did not win. But oh my God. The shot making correct. For Anthony Edwards in that basketball game correct. Was insane. But overall, it's been very good. 22-12 in his games. He's been insane. Donovan Mitchell, 5. And so in the immediate, like, these are the guys I'm thinking about as we flow into all NBA stuff. Steph, Maxie, so, Brunson, Luka, all in the conversation for me.
So who's your second team?
Ah, yes. It is time for the second team. Okay. So
I'll tell you mine real quick, because apparently you have some thoughts on your chest and we'll let you get them off, my friend.
Okay.
As we do the shuffle, right? Mm-hmm. I'm keeping an eye again on the Giannis, Wimby, Luki thing. I still think I have them first. Jaylen Brown becomes an automatic on the second team because he's in the MVP conversation. Cade Cunningham becomes an automatic. Ant becomes an automatic. Steph Curry becomes an automatic. Jaylen Brunson's right there. And I am thinking about Kevin Durant and Donovan Mitchell. And so it gets hard. Like, those are my 12 locks to me that are just, these are going to be all NBA players. The last three get interesting. Based on the 5 you gave me, I am super intrigued where you go with this next, as far as the next 5.
Okay, fair enough. All right, so Shea, Cade, Jaylen Brown, Anthony Edwards, Donovan Mitchell, that is my first team as of today. Second team for me, Steve. I have Luka, I have Jaylen Brunson, I have Tyrese Maxey, I have Stephen Curry, which also circling back to Tyrese Maxey, one incredible season for him. 34-7, 2 steals and a block per game for him. Please leave him and VJ Edge come alone. They are fine. Let them talk it up on the sideline. It's going to be okay. They're competitive. Also, Tyrese Maxey getting his first signature shoe with New Balance later this year. So quick salute to him. Yeah. That report comes from Shams Charania a little bit earlier. So just want to salute him. His star has risen over the past few seasons. He deserves this. So I wanted to say his name. But Tyrese Maxey on my second team right now.
Can I ask a question?
Final selection. Oh, yes.
Oh, go give your final selection, and then I'll ask my question.
Oh, my bad. To close out the second team, I have Jamal Murray.
Okay, so my question now becomes, you have not said Jokic's name, right?
Correct.
You've not said Giannis' name, right?
Mm-hmm.
You've not said Wimby's name, right? Correct. How much is that going to change the calculus for you when they enter your stratosphere?
Quite a bit if/when they enter the stratosphere. Because, like, those are guys that have played at, like, first-team levels when they've been healthy. It is just, are you going to be healthy? And so that's going to naturally push some names down if they do end up hitting that threshold. So, like, as I said at the top, those are guys that are under that 79% of games played threshold. So, like, they're out for me right now. But as we get to this third team, Steve, I have Denny in. And had a case for second team, honestly. Again, 26-7-7, 61 true shooting, like plus one with him on, minus 8 with him off. He has the fourth highest offensive on-off split in the league in terms of what happens when he goes to the bench, behind Jokic, Giannis, and Julius Randle. among guys that have played at least 500 minutes. So, like, the impact has been there. And again, the Blazers in the playing picture right now. And meant to say this at the top because we always do this disclaimer when we talk about MVP and All-NBA. You yell at me because I do sometimes have differences between my MVP five and my All-NBA first team five because I do factor in the winning more for MVP than I do for All-NBA.
It doesn't make any sense. If you're telling me these five players you consider for MVP, these should be your five players that are your first team. I don't understand it. It doesn't compute in my brain.
It is just things that I factor in a little bit more heavily for one award than the others. And that's where you lean to some slight differences for me across the years. But wanted to get that in. But Diddy on the 13 for me. Kevin Durant is in. I had a real long conversation with myself deciding between KD and Alperen Şengün. Because I had an iteration of the team that had both of them. And I was like, well, I don't know if I can do that considering with some of these guys. And then you also have like the recent games for Şengün. Like it got kind of funny. And as you know, I have generally been higher on the
it's about time because you told me Şengün was the MVP candidate and it's Kevin Durant, buddy.
I have in general felt better about the Şengün season than the KD season. I will say, like, as I was like, okay, let's get the case together, etc., like it was becoming harder for me to argue in good conscience Şengün over KD, and now you're factoring in like five more missed games for Şengün, the minutes difference there, like some of the advanced stuff that I look at, EPM one being one of them, like KD has a higher one with a little bit of a gap at this point. So like that part is interesting. It's like, okay, I'm going to have to flip on this. But so that's when we get KD there. Julius Randle is in for me. Devin Booker's in for me. Scottie Barnes is in for me.
Okay, I understand it. And I feel confident about this third team that I have. Okay. Kevin Durant, Donovan Mitchell, Tyrese Maxey, Julius Randle, and Devin Booker. I feel confident about the 15 I put together. I think it gets interesting down the stretch, but I feel pretty good. Like, I feel like they've all had really great seasons. They've helped elevate their teams to a different level. So that's where I'm at. You, how much time did you think about this? How much of a pretzel did you tie yourself into?
I don't want the answer to be like too long because like I'm speaking into a microphone. I want to be as thorough as possible. You know what I mean? So I did give a lot of thought to this. And like, it was hard to leave off Alperen Şengün. It was hard to leave off James Harden, Jalen Duren, Chet Holmgren, MPJ, Jalen Johnson. Like, there are a lot of names that factor into this. And to your point, if Jokic gets healthy and now crushes that game's play threshold or gets back on pace, he's sliding back into the first team, which naturally bumps everyone down one. You know what I mean? So, like, I still have to wait for if Jokic is there, if Wimby is there, if Giannis is there. Like, that's going to throw me further for a loop as we get down the line. But even removing those guys, there are so many good seasons happening, Steve.
There are. Great players doing great things. We just got to get you some efficiency, Nikias.
that's a good shot. Can I ask you a question before we move?
Absolutely.
I meant to ask you during the All-Star portion, we were talking about the East stuff. Mm-hmm. Where are you at with Karl Anthony Towns and how his season is being viewed? Because it's been very odd, like him trying to find his place within the new offense, and then some of the shot making has been weird, and like the defense, there have been some high moments and there have been a lot of low moments, and now like there's just this overall dark cloud around what this Knicks season has been. And I do feel like a lot of conversation is around in Cat within this, and I don't know if all of that is fair, but he does deserve a good bit of criticism for some of the play. So I'm just like, where are you at with Cat right now?
How many players are averaging 21 and 11?
Not many.
I'll give you a spoiler. It's two. It's him and Jokic. And so I feel like Cat is getting a lot of the – he's shouldering a lot of the Knicks' issues, in my opinion. And I think defensively he could be better. He should be better. They need him to be better if they want to have success in the playoffs. But I have not felt like the shooting is going to be something that's going to consistently be bad. Like, eventually that should turn around. Should be some sort of reverse regression. And he's been important to what they do. And I think the Knicks have prioritized just kind of opening things up as opposed to Cat go cook, which I understand when you're trying to build a philosophy where we're playing with pace, we're playing with tempo, we're attacking, we're doing different things, we're empowering Mikal Bridges, we're empowering OG Anunoby. That may leave Cat off the table, but there are moments where they need Cat and they establish him and they use him in the post at the elbow and he attacks and he's a threat in pick and roll. You know, him and Brunson, two-man game, it's not easy to guard. So for me, I don't necessarily go, oh boy, this Cat season's been bad. I don't know if I put him, like at the mythical fourth team, if I had to sign between Cat and Jalen Duren, I may choose Jalen Duren because of impact. Like, this Pistons team is not this version of the Pistons if Jalen Duren does not make this leap defensively, if he does not make this leap aggression-wise offensively, being able to be effective on the short roll and make plays, not only finishing, but passing. We don't see that. So I would probably give him the leg up because of impact, but I wouldn't downgrade Cat's season. I just think it's easy to kind of poke at Cat. And, you know, once you get the narrative, oh, well, the new system, he's got to fit in, and the, what's the comfort level, and we just kind of keep poking and nagging at that, you don't really go away from it. You know what I mean? And so I just feel like he's kind of a victim of that to a degree. But, I mean, it's interesting because it's almost like, for some people, Kat and Julius Randle have flip-flop roles. Because now everybody's everybody loves Julius Randle all of a sudden. It's interesting because, oh, man, Julius, you can't win with Julius Randle. Yeah, you can. Yeah, you can. Quick decisions, good drives, strong finishes. Just intriguing to watch the little narrative flip. I'm thinking.
It is a funny bit, and as I can attest to doing the show with you and also just talking to you offline, you have been much higher on Julius Randle almost since from the time that he was traded to Minnesota, honestly. Like, when that trade happened, it's like, oh, boy. The Knicks are opening up their offense with Cat, the shooting, et cetera. I don't know what this Randle Rudy fit about to be like. And there was some clunk in this offense early on. So, like, not that all of it was unfair. But to your point, it is very funny. It's a much more overall favorable view of Randle. I'd say quickly on Cat. Like, I do think there was some system blending and some chemistry building that he needed to add as the offense shifted around a little bit. And we talked through that earlier in the year. And I think since then, like, it's just as boring as it may sound, it is just Cat needing to play better at this point. He's taking a higher percent of his shots at the rim this year. Per Basketball Reference, he is converting 60.5% of his shots at the rim. That would be a career low for him. 44% of his shots, converting 44% of his shots in floater range. That would also be a career low for him. The mid-range shooting is down. Like, it is just, there is comfort things in how defenses treat him. You have long talked about teams getting more comfortable putting wings on him, not just sending help towards Cat drives, but when they're sending them, and, you know, sometimes it comes from high, sometimes from the baseline, et cetera. There is that. Some of this is just like, Cat, you just got to make your shot sometimes. Like, there have just been misses at the rim that you just normally don't have. And, like, when that turns around for him, I am curious to see, like, how much that helps the Knicks, first and foremost. And does that help center them, figuratively and literally? And then, to your point about the narrative around the Cat season so far, like, how much of him just making some of the bunnies and making some of the threes, as you mentioned, the three-point shooting is down as well. How much does that just flip the conversation around it? Maybe then it just becomes the defense, and if he's solid or not, that kind of thing. The fact that all that's happening together with this Knicks run, I do think people are just lower on the season overall than maybe they should be. I don't think it's unfair to be a little bit lower than you were earlier in the year. I don't think he's just suddenly not even in all-star conversation. All that. Like, that's probably a bridge too far for me.
I got him as an all-star lock. Do you have anything else before we hit the break, Nikias?
I don't think so. Like, I guess just quick, like, I'm just trying to figure out, like, what to do with, like Chet and Devin Booker for all-star and all-NBA stuff is just going to be interesting, because that is very much a what do you prioritize bit. Like, even beyond the winning, it is just what Chet's done defensively. And it's obviously important offensively as well with the shot making, but, like, that defense versus Devin Booker setting the table and his overall versatility and his skill set opening up things for others. Like, his box score stuff is still very good, but I do think it'd be easy to kind of look at, ooh, his 3-point percentage is what now? His true shooting percentage is what now? He's not having the Booker year, but, like, if you watch those Suns, his usage alone makes them so much better. So, like, I'm curious to see, like, how people land on those two in particular.
It's going to get real interesting, because I don't imagine Chet and Booker not both being all-stars. When you get to all-NBA, you got to put 15 names together.
Yeah, it gets...
What's your tiebreaker? What's your subjective nature? Because Devin Booker has elevated them, but Chet Holmgren has been a more consistent version of himself on both ends of the floor. So how do you kind of navigate, you know, once you kind of get to, oh, this is four names for three slots? It's like me with Paolo Banchero last year, where I was like, oh, he's definitely all NBA. And then I sat down and I put it together. I was like, oh, no.
No, he's not.
So it's like, I feel like one of those guys is going to be like, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. And then you slot everyone together and it's like, oh, this is real tough. So I think they all are playing at a high level. And that's the fun of talking about this. All these guys are having great seasons. The basketball has been fantastic. And so it's more of a salute to them than, you know, oh, whatever y'all do.
Yeah, it ain't got to be nasty. Now I think about it. Then we can go to break. Like, I'm probably going to have Chet all defense first team at minimum. And, like, he might just be my depoy by the end of this. So, like, it would be kind of odd for me to have him with both of those and not have him on the third team. So, even by the end of this podcast, I'm probably going to have to move Chet to the third team. Like, that.
Oh, you've been sprinkling. You've been really casually sprinkling that depoy into the meatloaf, buddy.
So he's been nuts. Evan, like, I don't know how serious Evan Mobley's into it right now, but like since he's been back and starting for Cleveland, his defense has been nuts. Now Cleveland, the rest of them kind of come together with this, but like he's been really good. Talked about Rudy Gobert. We're not going to do it again. I have overloaded you with enough of my basketball thoughts, so we're not going to do that. But he's going to be in the conversation too, Steve. Just want to go ahead and prepare you. He's been very good. But yeah, those are our MVP thoughts, all NBA thoughts as of January 20th. Drop your comments. You know, drop your thoughts in the comments. Let us know how you feel. Be nice. Be constructive. But let us know how you feel. No. And we're going to take a break.
No. light the candle. Send us to break.
All right. Well, I'm going to go light a candle. In the meantime, stay tuned. When we return, we have some unrivaled thoughts because, buddy, what a weekend of basketball it was. And we are back with this episode of the Dunker Spot. And Steve, it is time to recap what we saw from Unrivaled play over the weekend plus Monday. And buddy, we had some results. We entered the weekend with Rose BC, your defending champions, being undefeated. Two straight losses for Rose BC. And I kind of wanted to start there. Like, it's a shorter season, so like any two-game losing streak just feels like the end of the world. Like, obviously, they are going to be fine. We just saw last year they got off to a slow start, got hot at the right time. Chelsea Gary brought them home. So, like, I'm not worried about the Rose, but I think this weekend or this stretch of games just kind of highlighted how important Chelsea Gray is when she's at an A or A minus level as a scorer instead of A++ what we saw to start the year. It does put the spotlight on everyone else, which is where, like, it is nice to see Kalia Copper back on the floor, and you immediately see with this amount of space what the cutting can open up and some of those off-ball screening actions, how she's able to read Chelsea hit her there, just the self-creation reps that Ka can get into. You look to see that continue, see her just kind of build more comfort, more rust. More than anything, though, kind of look at it like Azaree Stevens. I think how versatile she is offensively, her ability to shoot, her ability to drive, her ability to operate as a pick and roll or pick and pop partner. You kind of see across these two games, when she doesn't have it going, it does just make it tougher offensively for them. And if she doesn't have it going, that does put a little bit of a dent on some of the two big lineups that they were having success with earlier in the year. And so it's just like, it's weird to see them lose because they just hadn't done it to this point. And it's like, okay, Chelsea needs a little bit more help in the scoring department. You want to see the defense overall kind of tighten up. There were some uncharacteristic, like, off-ball lapses in particular, them defending pick and rolls, them defending, like, splits and stuff like that. It's just like, okay, this is what it can look like when it's not Chelsea Gray is making literally every shot, and so it doesn't matter what else is happening.
Yeah, I mean, well, the expectation for Chelsea to average almost 40 a night is hard to sustain, but I think
probably not fair.
They faced two teams that, like, the Hive needed a win, absolutely bad, and they can. Where you have questions about the offensive end, sometimes the defense has never been a question mark, and so for them being able to have different combinations with versatility to be able to defend in a different way to put pressure on the Rose, and I think that's when you get to different combinations, like, okay, how much do we have? Who plays with each other? What does that look like? How do we balance that out? They got to figure that portion of it out. And then if you look at, you know, playing the Laces, hungry team, that's a team that's like, hey, we're going to compete and you have to deal with us. And so, okay, how do you adjust to teams taking your success and throwing it back at you? And that's kind of the fun part of the Unrivaled season, is seeing how teams navigate throughout the season, you know, because, okay, it's 3-on-3. It's competitive. No one wants to lose. We're going to get after it. And yeah, you have to deal with us. I think that's been the most common thing. Like, there's no guarantees. You're not going to be able to roll over your success in that game.
Yeah. Like, I think even to your high point, which, again, congrats on their first win. A lot of newcomers there. It was like they had that first game against the Mist, I believe. It's like, ooh, this is going to be kind of tough. But in every game since, it's been, oh, well, this is a good quarter and a half, and then it kind of fell apart. Ooh, this is a good half. And then it kind of fell apart. Ooh, this is the first good three quarters, and then it fell apart in the fourth. Like, they've been getting incrementally better as the season's gone on. So for them to be the team to knock off the Rose for the first time and to score 78 in the process, it's like, oh, this is neat. Final possession of that game, sideline inbound, get a switch, Kelsey Mitchell, we just beating you off the bounce. It's like, ooh, this is what Kelsey Mitchell could do, 24 points in that game. But
hey, as soon as you, I saw the screen for Kelsey, I was like, oh, well, y'all are gonna turn the corner.
This might get finished. Tough. Last thing I sprinkle in on the high, or maybe we circle back, we'll see. Monique Billings continues to play very well. Just a double-double machine, now coming off the bench, still just playing incredibly well. The drives have been fun to watch with her pretty much this entire season. So I wanted to get a quick salute there, but salute to the high. And again, just keeping an eye on how the Rose adjust. Like, it's certainly not the end of the world for them losing a couple, but it was interesting to see them lose a couple. What was storyline number one for you, Steve, from this recent stretch
of play? Well, can I ask you a quick question?
You sure can.
Who started for the Mist against the Breeze?
Yes! I believe we got Veronica Burden, Alicia Gray, and Breanna Stewart.
And the Breeze won by how much?
Well,
what a response. What a response from the young Breeze, who teams looked like they were quickly tired of them as a concept for a good bit. But that's a tough team to deal with when Paige is dropping 37, Rekia Jackson, the scoring, the playmaking, the drives. And then you have to deal with some combination of Dominique Malanga and Cam Brink alongside with Kate Martin, just like, I'm doing my job. Like, that is a team you have to keep an eye on. And so I'm telling you, you got to keep an eye on these Breeze. The Mist, I am intrigued to see what they're going to do, because if the defense is going to slip, like, you got to figure out your combinations here. You got to lock this in. You can't experiment too much, because you need the defense to work and you need the bigs to work. So that has to work. If you're to ask me what my other ones are, Nikias, it's time for you to acknowledge the season that Marina Mabry has put together.
I knew it was coming.
It hasn't been a lot of hootie hoos, but she is hootie hooed all over the court. And Big gave buckets every single night. It's time for you to acknowledge it. There's no need for questions. It's time for you to respect the bucket getting. And it's time for you to respect the it's she's getting after it, Nikias. Respect Marina Mabry and what she does on a nightly basis. And then another thing, it's time to bring the old classic back, and then I'll get it back. I'll get out of the way. Okay. I think it's time, Nikias. The hashtag is MVPlum.
Oh, here it is.
Kelsey Plum is doing it all. Turn the corner. I got space. I'm bumping you. Hey, Phantom? Is she pulling up in a Phantom? That's what she's doing every night. So,
no shot. Okay, so a quick thing and then a question that may potentially annoy you. So one, as you were talking about the Mist defense sliding, if I could be respectfully messy for a bit. I thought, and I said this on this podcast, many threads on Twitter, wrote about it and everything. I think people were very disrespectful overall about the Atlanta Smith Deep Boy case. I don't think enough respect was given for the responsibility that she had in Minnesota, the fires that she put out, all the things. So I'm not going to hang there too long. We have plenty of W pods you can go back to for those thoughts, right? Gosh darn it, four fouls in the first. We can't bring the foul trouble bit to Unrivaled. We can't do that. What do you mean four fouls in the first? Now, did I like all four of those calls? I did not. And I said after opening weekend, hey, there's going to be some kind of conversation about how some of these games are rough as the season goes on. The players are just very frustrated. Paige was just apoplectic with some stuff early on the opening weekend. But, like, Atlanta, no. Don't give people ammo. Don't do this. Your defense, your versatility, it's too important. Please don't do this. Now, second, Steve, to poke at the hashtag MVPlum bit, she is once again playing alongside a former South Carolina big who is doing a little bit of everything. And one could argue has been a little bit better if you're accounting for both. Are you prepared for Aaliyah Boston propaganda for what she's done this year?
Yes, I am. I'm prepared for this. I've been prepared for this for the last 2 years. So no worries. We're going to be fine, bud.
It's 19-8-3, two steals and two blocks for Leah Boston so far this year. She's been very good. Okay. Where do I want to go? Back to Marina Mabry. That's where I wanted to land. Because
It's time. It's time.
It's time. Because let me tell you, as we were watching Marina Mabry hoop, you know, in the opening games, there's no Skylar Diggins. She finally made her debut over the weekend. It's like, hey, this is a lot on Marina Mabry. We're going to keep eyes on the shot making, but we are definitely going to keep eyes on the decision making. And that's where it's like, ooh, she's like top three in assists. And then you look over a little bit, it's like, ooh, she's wearing turnovers? That's not great. Over the past weekend, in addition to the shot making, Steve, we're going to give Marina Mabry her props. Just to zoom out, 22 assists, 19 turnovers in her first three games. 10 assists, 4 turnovers over these last two. And the bucket getting was insane. Mix of drives, middies, not just threes, but deep threes. Hey, listen, if you cut down the turnovers, you get more of the shot-making blend. You see more of the pick-and-roll chemistry developing with Aaliyah Edwards in particular. Like, there is room for her to thrive in this format. And she did play well over the weekend. I have no issue acknowledging that she played well over the weekend. So, hey, Marina deserves the salute. That is fair. Lunar Isles also getting their first win of the season. What are we to make of this vinyl season, by the way? I guess while we're here.
They compete, and you can tell when they have it, and you can tell when they don't have it. And, like, I feel like the biggest thing is, like, what's the third quarter look like? Because, again, your third quarter sets the tone for the winning score. They just lose it. It's like, y'all don't have enough offense to be down 9 going into the fourth quarter. You need to be in a grind mud fest to a degree. And it's like, De'Aaron Hamby, is De'Aaron cooking? Is Ryan Howard cooking? Is Courtney Williams cooking? Okay. How many minutes is Brittany Griner playing? Like, they are tough to deal with, but the consistency is where I'm just like, I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's just been kind of odd. I think De'Erica coming off of, what, an 8-point on 10-shot game is just like, ooh. Like, she rarely has those. So, like, I'm not concerned about her move forward. But it does kind of reinforce your point. Like, they do kind of need to lead with their defense so they can get into some of the early offense stuff. Because, like, as I mentioned on the last pod, they do get into, like, some fun splits or they run some fun off-ball stuff for Ryan within this format. But, like, then it's, okay, is Ryan shooting immediately? Is Ryan catching and holding and then looking to attack? If she does look to attack, is this just going to be a pull-up? Is she getting all the way to the rim? If she does get there, what type of shot is she taking at the rim? It's just like a lot of weirdness. And as you see in the Unrivaled format overall, if you miss a shot at the rim specifically, you are in trouble working your way back. Like, it's just tough to do. And if you hit the ground, you're certainly cooked on that front. And so that's where it's just like, ooh. Just shot profile stuff in the back of my head with the vinyl, like nothing super new. But I think you really feel that in the third quarter, to your point. So, like, that part has been interesting.
Did you hit everything you wanted to before we hit the horns?
Ooh, I haven't. Shout out to the Laces. Jackie Young had herself a night with Asia Wilson in attendance. So, what shout out Asia real quick. Yes. Was there for the Jackie versus Chelsea Bowl. A 4-point win there. Jackie with nasty Euro finish through contact to win that game. She's insane. Mm-hmm. I am still kind of chuckling at just her and Alyssa Thomas on the same team as a concept. Like, that is still just funny to me, but they are obviously very good. One thing that popped for me, I think it was the Friday matchup. They beat the Phantom. And early in that game, any pick and roll with Kelsey Plum, like, they were, like, legit blitzing Kelsey Plum in pick and roll. And I was like, speaks to how good Kelsey is and the impact she can have offensively. Like, hey, we want to get the ball out of her hands. And I'm just like, thinking back to Unrivaled last year. And, like, there were some spots last season and there were some pocket D for the Laces earlier this year. And Andrew Wade said as much after the game when I asked him about this. I was like, huh, you very rarely see, like, legit blitzes in Unrivaled. You may see a big up at the level. We'll show the hand a little bit, kind of like the Miles Turner bit that we talked about on the podcast before. I was like, huh, y'all are, like, blitzing KP. And in the first half, KP's like, oh, well, cool. Let me just get off of this. Here's a slip. Here's a basket. And they dialed the deck in the second half. So I was like, that is interesting. Asked them post game about it. It's like, yeah, we sprinkled this in second half of my last game. Want to get some more of this look on film, looking ahead to the playoffs to see what it looks like. I was like, okay. Which just kind of brings a bigger thought for me, like, how much experimentation can you actually do in a season this short? That kind of thing. I kind of want to, like, go ahead.
Well, I mean, it's 3-on-3. So in theory, trapping in 3-on-3 is insane. You can only do it in certain scenarios. You can't do it consistently because there's too much opening. It's you only have one person. So that's a hard 2-on-1, 2v1. I think it's less the season, and like you have to be able to try and mix things in a 3-on-3 mm-hmm. format and make it impactful more than, hey, this is just our base every single time. You just got to have something in your back pocket.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So that was the major thing that I wanted to hit there. You already saluted Paige Beckers, her shot making insane. Also taking more threes over the past couple of games. Oh, that's the last thing I wanted to say. Breonna Stewart, 0 of 10 from 3 in the first three games, 4 of 10 over her last two. Ask Dewey about the three-point shooting ahead of the season. Nice to see a 3 of 5 ever from her on that front. That is going to be pretty important for her as this unrivaled season goes, and eventually when we had the W season, like where she lands as a three-point shooter. I am intrigued on that front. I think that's going to be my final unrivaled thought. We'll tap in with a
preview. Very good.
There we go.
Very good. And I will give you my final unrivaled thought, which is Cam Brink blocking that shot and Paige being like, hey, could you get the basketball next time? Was one of the funnier bits. Would you like to save the ball? And Cam Brink is emoting. It's great. Fantastic. Hit the horns.
There we go. Thank you for listening to and or watching this episode of the Dunker Spot. Please subscribe if you haven't already. We're on Apple, Spotify, RIP Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. And as Steve mentioned earlier, subscribe to the Yahoo NBA YouTube channel. This is where you can find a lot of awesome stuff. Also, check out our interview with Becky Hammond if you haven't already. Really good stuff there. W fans, Aces fans, basketball fans, coaches looking to learn more, all the things. Check out that episode. You can follow me on socials at TheKaiasNBA. You can follow Steve on socials at SteveJones20. And with that, we'll catch y'all later in the week.